The Windows Media Stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
So, Alex, what's been going on down in Portland lately?
Oh, Portland. Well, I just went and saw The Life Aquatic for a second time. Have you seen that?
No, not yet.
Oh, it's great. What I love about the Northwest, and I think it's one of the reasons why I got so excited when I first came here. I first came here about, it was 88, 89? Yeah, 88. And I found that you could go to a movie theater and drink beer.
No!
They have these movie theaters here that are like where they sell beer. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. And I think that's one of the things I like about the Northwest and Portland.
Is that just Portland?
It's just kind of like that way. It's just kind of like, it's like, you know, there's a lot of opportunity here to drink really good beer and good coffee.
No, wait a minute. Where did you come from?
Well, where did I come from? Oh, jeez. Well, I grew up back in New York and Connecticut.
Oh.
And but went to college at the University of Denver, and then lived in Chicago. I got a master's degree in journalism from Northwestern out of Chicago. And just went on was on the news career starting there, and moved out here from New York in, gosh, when was it, 96, and have been here ever since.
Now, what attracted you to Portland then, besides the movie theater beer?
Well, it's funny because I was married at the time. And my wife's family was from Portland. And we have two children. And we're living in a beautiful part of New York in the Hudson Valley near a town called New Paltz. It's about 2 hours from the city, and we lived in this old converted church up in a community called Cragsmore, which if you look on the map, do a Google Maps search. Have you checked out Google Maps? I love that.
Oh, dude. Don't even give me that. That's a whole hour and a half in and of itself, dude. It's fantastic.
Have you seen what Udell's doing with these screencasts and stuff?
I drool just thinking about it.
Oh, it's so cool. Anyway, so Cragsmore is in the Shawangunk Mountains, and it's up at about 2,000 feet. It's a former artist colony, and there was this guy named Frank Dellenbaugh, and he was an explorer, and he was like the artist in the second expedition down the Colorado River. But he loved Cragsmore, and he built all these funky houses, but he wasn't an architect or anything. So he built this little chapel for some person's estate up there, and it was eventually converted into a house. And we lived there. And,
huh.
But it was, I was at the time, I was writing for a magazine in New York City. I was working for a magazine called HFN, the Home Fashion Network.
Oh, my God.
And I just needed a job really badly. I'd actually had, had a fun gig working at Woodstock 94.
Oh, really?
And, yeah.
For the magazine or just independently?
Well, no, for, a buddy of mine who lived in Cragsmore, a guy named Danny Sokoloff, who I did an interview with Eric Rice in a podcast a few weeks ago. He's this great guy, and he was a rock concert promoter, and our first child, Hannah, was just a baby, and I was at home and freelancing and stuff, And he said, you know, I'm helping put on the Woodstock 94. We're doing this thing called the Surreal Field, and Apple Computer is creating a digital newspaper. And he said, would you like to help out? I said, well, sure, that sounds like fun. And it was. And it was a lot of fun. And that's actually what got me hooked into this whole world. But after that, the gig ended, and I was freelancing, and I was actually helping AOL. They were just developing their news channel. And they were looking for people to respond to people's feedback about the news channel. And I'd have to I had to reply individually to each one of these, you know, each one of these people who gave feedback.
Oh boy!
And
AOLers, boy, oh boy!
It was like 94 AOLers, and it's like I started to like hear like a little form message, and I was like, "Thank you very much for your feedback. I really appreciate your interest in blank blank."
Wait!
And I did.
At some point, were you starting to miss your whole fashion magazine gig?
Well, no. This was before that, but it was just driving me nuts, and I couldn't keep up with the email. And they said, "No, we want you to reply personally to the email."
Oh,
it was my first. I think it was my first experience with spam. Really, did I know? But it was like self-imposed.
Oh,
so, but I needed work and. And I really wanted to cover technology, Chris. And there was this magazine, and I had an in there. It was part of the Fairchild Group. But I kind of had this feeling, well, no, I can't just say I want to do technology because probably everyone else does. And so the editor calls me and says, what would you like to cover? And I said, textiles. I was like, we need a textiles reporter.
Textiles?
So they hired me. Yeah, so they hired me, and... And I was hired as the senior decorative bedding editor.
Alex. Alex. Okay, look, you do know that this recording is going to be listened to a few tens of thousands of people, right?
Yeah, I know, but it was just one of those times in your life that is just, you know, you got to look back on with some humor.
Come on, dude, the worst I had was like Pizza Hut delivery boy. That's like probably the worst job that I... No, wait, that probably wasn't the worst job I ever had, now that I think about it. Nothing compared to textiles, though. Writing about textiles! Is there stuff to write about?
And they wanted a hard news reporter.
Oh, of course.
To cover this.
That industry is cutthroat. Textiles? I mean, don't even get me going on that.
Oh, gosh. So I joined them, and I was writing, and I was trying to write like tough stories on running three sheets.
Oh, God!
And they thought I was too tough.
Oh, God! What did you make? Did you make someone cry or something? Were you like just ripping people apart for literally ripping people apart? Textiles. Pun intended.
How could you question the quality of a wrinkle-free sheet?
You know, if anybody could question that quality, it's you, Alex. And I think you...
It was me, you know.
Oh, man.
Well, I found... There was one story I found out about. And, Walmart. And Walmart was, playing real hardball with its suppliers and forcing them to cut their margin. And I wrote about it.
No, wait, what year is this, Alex? Just to get some direction.
This was 96.
Okay.
This was 96. And the winter is maybe it might have been fall of 95, winter of 96. I had it sourced, but they did not like the story, and the textile people were calling me up, and they're saying, I'm getting calls from Kmart asking me to drop my prices, and it was a tough time in that industry. And the editor came to me, and, they were not happy because their advertisers were were threatening to pull all their ads. And they said, well, we really don't think that this story was very responsible. And they fired me.
Wow. Now this is this is responsible journalism. This is the way journalism is, even to this day.
Is the way it is. Yeah, and it was a real lesson to me in the way the business worked, and I can understand a lot of the issues that are happening right now, as far as what we're seeing in terms of citizen media, and how. The trade press is notorious for this. Steve Gilmore talks all the time about how he's been fired from every, publication he ever worked for. It's a funny business. They really are there to serve the industry.
Now, do you think that's a fair term, citizen journalism? I mean, it's a doctorate in journalism, correct?
I have a master's.
Not to inflate your title. Do you think that citizen journalism is a fair title to use in the case of someone who has really no other label other than blogger?
Yeah, I think people are trying to struggle just to find the phrases that fit these different, these different issues that are surfacing. And they are bloggers essentially, right?
So then what makes them...
But they're not affiliated with a mainstream media organization.
Okay, now what does that mean?
I mean, is a person a reporter for, for the New York Times or the New York Daily News, they're citizens, most of them. sure, almost all of them.
I'd hope so.
so is the citizen media fair? I think it helps describe kind of the issue that we're facing now. It seems to me a little bit, the term citizen seems to be very much kind of one that's associated with government. I think with a lot of terms that we hear now, people are trying to get their just grasp around the subject, because really it's not about the term citizen media, it's really about, as you know, it's just how easy it is to make content now.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. I mean, it is so easy to do. I'm having breakfast tomorrow with the guy who is one of the founders of a blog company. What's her name? Mind? I'll find it in a second.
Sure.
But this company has 60,000 bloggers.
How many?
I mean... 60,000.
Are they new?
The company's name is, and I hadn't really heard of them.
So I take it they're local in Portland.
Mindsay. Mindsay.
Mindsay?
Yeah.
I'll have to check them out. Are they in Portland then, or are they just visiting?
No, they're in Virginia. The guy's in Portland, and I was reading about them on the Blog Herald, and just ironically, he was going to be in Portland this week. So
hey, they have RSS.
But 60,000, and just think about how many people have started blogging now compared to last year.
Yeah,
and now how many people are starting the podcast, and the services that are developing, such as, this new Blog Matrix service, and, and Eric Rice's audio blog, and, Evan Williams' audio, and Adam's pod show,
See, to me...
I don't know what pod show's going to be.
Well, to me, it seems...
It's so easy to create.
Yeah. I think I'm seeing, even in a conversation that I had tonight... with Mike Torres from MSN Spaces, he was talking about some of the things, some of the things that they were, talking about doing and how they were, where they saw Spaces on, the whole blogosphere front, and they really pitch it as an easy way of publishing content. And I mean, not necessarily business-wise. And I asked him specifically the question, you know, LiveJournal seems to attract a teenage crowd ridden with angst, and TypePad seems to attract a more business type of crowd. What kind of crowd does MSN Spaces attract? And his...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, his answer specifically was general. It was like more like, hey, this is a way that you, not caring about anything, could publish something. And it makes sense. From everything I've seen on MSN, it's just a chance for you, on a personal level, to share the stuff that you want to share. And and that makes sense. In the landscape, in seeing it in that way, the closest thing that I think you could compare MSN Spaces to would be possibly a blogger, specifically Blogger.com.
Right.
Because there are very few other services that are really, I mean, coming from major brands that really, you know, can carry that kind of weight. It's going to be interesting to see what Yahoo does with their blogging services.
Right.
Because they've been in, Korea now for a while?
Is that where they baited?
Gosh.
Did they bait it?
I don't want to go on. I'm going on record by saying I don't know. It's definitely international, though. And if it's not Korea, then it's another country that has a large proliferation of broadband and communicating people. And not just geeks. I mean, people who love to communicate. So, So this mindset that you're meeting with is just kind of like a get-together, or...?
Well, I've been doing some research because I'm starting to prepare some stuff on, you know, RSS for publishers, and trying to, you know, look for some, you know, different material out there on, you know, who's doing it, how they're doing it, you know, why they're doing it, just to, you know, put some information together that, you know, that we're going to present. And I ran across Mindsay and saw that they have 60,000 bloggers. And if you read the blogs, it's, you know, it's a lot, you know, it's interesting. I haven't looked at their site in depth, but I'd like to talk with this guy tomorrow because he and his partner are based in Virginia, and from what I've read, it looks like there's a strong East Coast community there.
Yeah. See, that I think is probably the most interesting question to ask. All these blogging services, they seem to attract different people, whether it's regional or just interest-based. Every particular blogging service seems to have a certain kind of following. I that's what I find most fascinating in all the blogging services. Beyond just the surface level, these are the features that this service provides. Those are easy differentiators. What I'm interested in is the way the culture is defining, you know, what people use in general. So, like, there are actual networks of bloggers who knit. And, you know, I'm not a big knitter, so I couldn't tell you what the predisposition is, you know, if you want to knit and you want to blog, or if you love knitting and you want to blog, where do you go? There seems to be community leaders.
I've never covered knitting.
Well, see, I figured
get that on the record.
In textiles, you'd be close to it. I find that part is what's most fascinating to me as far as, like, the blogosphere in general, not just how it's, you know, impacting journalism and, you know, which, of course, impacts the world, but more, you know, the cultural aspect of it and how different groups of people, depending on, you know, how you define yourself in your roles in society, where you tend to go. Just because your friends go there, your colleagues go there. It's the same thing that happens even with IM clients. So some people use AOL Instant Messenger because all their friends use it. Or some people use Yahoo because all their friends use it. Or their businesses, they use it. So it's just interesting to see how which direction people go with the various services that are out there.
Stowe Boyd at Courant was talking about how, you know, what's happened to some of the social networking services, and suddenly they've found, you know, some of these have found that they have these huge communities in places like the Philippines.
Hmm.
You know, and they don't understand now, and it's like it's just like they suddenly have like this huge community in the Philippines. But in other countries, they don't really have any.
Really?
And so it's you know, how much of, how regional really do these services become? After some time, and do they establish their identity for those in that particular region?
You talked about to pull it back a bit. You're putting together information on RSS for publishers and how they're doing it. Did you catch the article on dmnews.com the other day?
Yeah, I did.
What do you think?
Jupiter.
Yeah, it was Jupiter Research basically saying that RSS adoption isn't simple and that a lot of companies out there don't even consider it to be on their radar.
Right. Well, I just pulled up my Delicious. Do you use it?
Delicious? I subscribe to a few feeds, but I don't actually use the service. I'm more of a scanner.
I have found that, I'm just starting to really use it because it helps me kind of catalog information for, stories and stuff we're working on. I was just curious because I just pulled it up. It's funny because I can agree in some respects with what they're saying, but I think, saying that RSS is still not widely adopted. I think that's true. I don't think you can argue that it's been fully adopted, that it's fully mature. I don't think it is at all.
No, I believe we're still in the chasm.
Yeah, and here's the quote. They say Jupiter Research admits that RSS is ideal for media firms and publishers that use email as a broadcast tool to use as an alternative for newsletter content distribution. Yet there were reservations, and they go on.
Well,
I think RSS is a great news. It's a great news tool. And, people are using it as a news tool all the time. But increasingly, marketers are publishers. And they're as much, and this comes back to this discussion about, citizen media. And who is publishing the news. And, and what is the attribution behind it. But I would agree that RSS is not mature, that email still is very effective in many ways. RSS is changing how people navigate, on the web. And RSS, to me, is going to be essential for people.
You know what's going to change
it? What?
I can tell you what's going to change it. And this
is,
it's going to be Internet Explorer 7.0. That's going to change the adoption curve. Because right now, according to this DM News article, and this is the online newspaper of record for direct marketers, I quote this article from March 21st, 2005. According to the New York market researcher, Jupiter Research, 45% of marketers have no plans to deploy RSS to supplement email, and only 5% currently do so. The findings were based on a recent executive survey. Well, that's the problem, is it was an executive survey.
Right. Exactly.
And for technology and movements that are very, central to the way that the conversation moves, at the grassroots kind of level, we understand at least that RSS is part of this whole landscape. People in this particular space, even people listening to this particular interview that may have subscribed to it in their news aggregator, we understand, kind of what's going on. But to asking executive about RSS, you're not going to get a very good answer. And I would go as far as to say asking a marketer about RSS, we're still at a very low penetration point. Although I do believe they're starting to wake up. They are starting to wake up.
Yeah, how do you see evidence of that?
In terms of waking up?
Sure, I'll tell you how I
Well,
how I do.
You see bits and pieces, and you see small small efforts being made to at least show that they're starting to get it. And it, like I said, bits and pieces. But until it's a turnkey solution for a lot of these major corporations, it's just not going to be on the radar. You know, even these executives, I mean, and I'm assuming the same group of executives, there are people, and when I say executives, I'm casting the net wide, I'm saying, in general, there are still people out there who receive information in a printed format, meaning they have their emails printed and then handed to them. Or they have information faxed to them. And to take statistics from this group of people, it's biased, you know, and it's every particular survey you do is going to be biased in one way or another. It's fair in the sense that, yes, it's true. RSS adoption is not really simple. I do agree with that point as well, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't be on the radar.
Right. You know, it is getting on the radar, but let's look at the let's go back to what we were talking about earlier about citizen media, right? And the amount of content that is out there, okay? It is going to be increasingly difficult to navigate the internet without some automation tools. You need those automated, people are needing those automation tools. I need them. People need these to be able to get the information that they really want.
When you say automated tools, what do you mean?
Well, RSS is a method of automation. It's automatically delivering the news to you. It's these automated formats that are going to be required.
So,
and if you know, in because how can you manually if we move increasingly to this dynamic environment where people are updating their, like, let's say, like, the blog platform really becomes the standard, okay?
The what?
And let's say the blog platform becomes a standard for how people create their websites in some period of time or something akin to it. That means that the content can be automatically, you can update your website on a far faster basis than you can now. Okay? And then if you have like a static HTML website. So if people are continually updating their, if it's going to be increasingly easy to get your content online, people are going to need tools to be able to consume it. And consume what they want, when they want, and how they want. And that's why, RSS will become, it's not just RSS, it's part of this shifting culture.
So the world is going to change around people.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the amount of information that people are putting online now, I mean, there's a huge transfer of information.
Oh, it's staggering. Yeah.
It's staggering. And so, like, how can... You can't do it... I mean, 5 years ago, RSS was just a baby, right? And, you could manually go around to the web without too much difficulty. You know, the web was starting to get larger. You know, was starting to get, becoming increasing in size. But now, people who started, who are like trying to do it like it was done 5 years ago are having real trouble. You just can't get to it all.
With all the information out there.
Yeah.
So what are you trying to put together, and for what reason?
I'm starting to do more programming around topics related to syndication.
And when you say programming, you mean like audio content?
We're doing audio and other kinds of content. I'm starting this new show called FeedFest, which is really the next generation of RSS Winterfest, which I did last year, and
yeah,
and which you participated in, which was a lot of fun. And so FeedFest is really about, is going to explore this changing dynamic that we're talking about. You know, how, the changing dynamics about consumers, people, consuming what they want, when they want, how they want, and really where they want. And so we're going to, you know, look at what's happening in this area and discussing issues related to it. And so that's one reason I'm really interested in talking to the founder of Mindsay tomorrow morning, because if you look at the people who are blogging on their platform, you know, they're, by the great majority of them are in their teens or, you know, early 20s.
Now, is your interest in... go ahead.
And so I'm interested in understanding a little bit about how those people are consuming their, how those people are consuming information.
Is that where...
And
I'm sorry, I got to let you finish your thought before I ask you another question.
Sure. No, and so that's, so, you know, that's my interest in talking with him. I'm interested in learning, because they seem to be big proponents of RSS. And they've just started implementing tags, and they seem to get it. And I'd like to, you know, understand a little bit about their audience, because I think it'll help, you know, provide some insight into a, you know, community that I don't know much about, and how they're using, you know, syndication applications like RSS.
Is it more the technology that interests you? Or, and I'm speaking in general, because there's everybody talks about blogs, everybody talks about RSS, but what is it about, let's say, RSS in particular, that draws you to it more than anything else?
Well, I just think it's really, I think what's really fascinating about what's happening right now is really the increase in the amount of content that's out there, and, you know, and how you, and how it is consumed and how it's being published. And the different ways you can use these applications to do whatever you want. And to me, it kind of shows a shift in society in many ways. And I want to, you know, my goal is to elevate the discussion around these topics, and show people how these applications are being used. I mean, that's a big part of this. I mean, we're going to have, you know, every week we'll have, it'll be an online video conference using a neat application called Flash Meeting. And with that, then we'll, like, interview a few people on a, you know, on a topic that we're discussing, but then we'll use... I'll podcast it, and that'll be essentially like a back channel where, you know, it's kind of like reviewing, you know, almost like a blog, you know, kind of like an inside look at, like, how the story's coming together and what I'm learning and maybe talking to someone about it. And then the third component will be like these how-to types of, screencasts that I think are just so really cool and allow to illustrate quite easily, you know, what these applications are about.
What software are you using for the screen caps?
TextMiz, Camtasia Studio.
Oh, yeah.
It's very nice.
I'm sure they'll be glad to hear that. They were at, a couple of them were at GnomeDex last year.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Well, I'm working with their evangelist over there because I really like their product. And I think it's a neat tool. And so we're going to, you know, we're going to use it and experiment with it.
So, do you find that Portland, to get back to the regional issue, is conducive for discussing technology? Is there a really strong tech community that is supportive of, well, I wouldn't even say these citizen journalism type of topics or just RSS or blog types of topics. I haven't spent that much time in the Pacific Northwest, but do you find it something that's keeping you there? Or is it frustrating?
It can be frustrating sometimes. But what's really fascinating about Portland, and I think it may be something that a Seattle experienced, a few years ago, is that we are having a huge influx of people coming into Portland who are like in their 20s. And that is really adding so much to the city. And I think it's going to be it's going to be its foundation for growth economically and culturally over the next, 10, 20 years. It's still pretty affordable to live here. And people can come here and, and get, kind of jobs as waiters or whatever. And live, and live, pretty well and have a great time with all the, other people their age who are here.
Have you spent much time? Go ahead. What were you going to say? We've got a little lag going on.
There's kind of like a hipster culture here. And that's pretty neat. And so that's why, I'm really excited about it. Is because, for instance, you have a community here who's really interested in film. And, you have a lot of artists who are here. And I think that is going to help the community quite a bit. And they're more attuned to, I would say, the social networking type, the social software applications that can extend what they do. And it's one reason why, I really like the it here, and why I want to do, why we're going to do an event here in July ourselves.
Oh, so you're actually doing a real, like, physical event?
Yeah, and this is the first time I've actually talked about it in a public way, and we don't even have the website up yet. but that's fine. I don't care. I've been talking a lot about it to folks. But I really like the idea of these extended events, right? And Robin Good came up with this term, X-events, right? Which I think is a great way to describe, how events can be done. And I was immediately looking at Gnome Decks to see what you were doing, because I knew you would do something. and I saw you were doing all the right things, and I was like, oh gosh, how could I ever doubt Mr. Perilla?
Well, we always try to leave
who I learned it from,
I'm humbled.
Because people like you, actually, who helped me get my heads around RSS when I was doing RSS Winterfest last year. I like conferences. And I love your conference. Your conference was like, it kind of felt like I was, I was there with family, to use that term. I mean, it was like, there was like people I knew who I'd read about, who I had, heard about, and the conversation was really great, and that was terrific. And it was small, and it wasn't really small, but it wasn't something like, a major consumer electronics show or something. But I thought, well, gosh, wouldn't it be fun to do something kind of, really different? And so I went and talked to this hotel here in Portland. It's called the Jupiter Hotel. And I said, would you guys be okay if, I got to tell you, this is going to be, there's going to be a lot of kind of like, artists and geeks and stuff, but it'll be pretty cool. And would it be cool if we turned your hotel like into a podcast studio and call it the Podcast Hotel? What if we called your place the Podcast Hotel? And she's like, that sounds like a great idea. I'm like, oh boy.
So wait. Why not the Happiness Hotel? You just bring a whole bunch of Muppets in there.
It's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights. At the podcast hotel tonight.
Yeah.
So we're gonna turn this hotel into a podcast and video blog studio, and the rooms will be, you know, will be podcast studios and video blog studios, and I'm going to try to get the people of Portland to get their heads around it, because I think people here would love to be a part of this. And so
I'm in.
You know, the goal. Great. The goal is to because Chris, we're in such an interesting time right now, where we're kind of at this juncture where, you know, you have the entertainment industry on one hand, like, arguing before the Supreme Court that PDP Network should be outlawed, okay? And on the other side, you have people saying, you're crazy. You know, this is nuts. You know, this is the network. You can't control the network, you know? And the outrage is starting to grow thin. And I think that's how Larry Lessig stated it.
Yeah.
It is starting to grow thin. And he did an interesting interview with Jeff Tweedy, who is of the band Wilco, who was apparently quite articulate, and who was saying, you know, it's, you know, I didn't want to be in this position, but essentially I am, and artists need to kind of stand up. And, you know, Lessig's point was, you know, the point is like, people need to just keep creating, and that's, you know, and that's really, you know, what I want to do with the podcast hotel is give people the ability to learn how to create, but also have people here who know what they're doing, who can learn from each other. You know, Mary Hodder, I was talking with her the other day, and she said, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it'd be kind of like a hacking session in a way, you know, where we're trying to, like, hack the different tools in some way to produce new kinds of stuff. And then, you know, then the other part of that is really trying to get, you know, the Portland community involved in it and other communities as well.
Yeah.
Where we go out into the community and kind of like, you know, my reporter instincts tells me, let's get the people here and then let's spread them out into the community for a few days. Let's start to use these different these neat tools so we can, you know, tell where people are and what they're saying, and, you know, aggregating what they're saying, and, you know, and presenting it, and finding really cool video blogs and highlighting those. So the whole idea is just to create. And that's what I think is really interesting about conferences right now, is that it's almost like events are now more for, I think events, if you really want to do an event, you should think about creating content. And, you know, as a primary objective for what you're doing.
What do you mean?
Because it's, well, I mean, you know, I mean, one thing I learned out of Paris's Winterfest was the discussions were great, you know, in the way, you know, in the actual webcast. They were terrific. But what happened was, what I really learned from that was the conversation extended much further. It extended into the IRC, it extended into the wiki, you know, it extended into the blogosphere. And that was content that I didn't create. That was content that somebody else created. That was really the community out there participating and contributing and their own, you know, their own insights.
No, go ahead.
No, and so that, you know, and so, you know, if you can do that with a conference where you're, you know, where essentially that content is being created over these, you know, that becomes a lot of different things. And it becomes a community in itself. And it becomes a way to, you know, elevate the discussion far greater than, you know, than you could with a conference a few years ago.
One of the things that I'm hoping to do with Gnomedex this time around Given that it's really this year is I can already say we're just a few months away, but just having launched it, essentially launching registration and kind of an all call, it's been received so warmly this year by people who, in my opinion, are movers and shakers, and not just people who live in Seattle or Portland necessarily, but on a global scale. Who understand
right.
that Gnomedex is very much a part of the conversation. I started thinking, well, what could I do? I mean, obviously we have a schedule, and we're doing things within that schedule. But I'm going to do my best to leave a couple of parts open to make it easier to draw some of those hallway conversations onto the main stage, so the people
right.
who are there can actually share in what's happening around them. So the event becomes
right.
the event. And the culture.
I think that's a very good way to do it.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We had struggled, obviously I'm probably, talking about your pains as well. Our organization, we've only got a few people working within Locker Gnome at this point. We've got myself, my operations manager, Ponzi, who also happens to be my fiancé. And then we've got... Thank you. We've got our editor, who lives in L.A., and he's you want to talk about glue that holds it all together? That's Bob.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Bob just does an amazing job. Robert Fogarty.
And what is he doing?
Bob essentially is kind of the almost the gatekeeper. So he's editing a lot of the content that you see on Locker Gnome. He's helping me with a few things that I need help with in terms of like writing and construction and editing. And
nice.
Yeah, he's so skilled, and his he's so into doing what he does, and he does it so well that I'll ask him a simple question. I say, hey, could you do this? Never a problem. I mean, he's on it even before I even have to ask. He is so proactive. Bob is by far one of the best people that I've had the pleasure of working with as an employer, so to speak. And then, of course, we've got ancillary projects like the Chris Perillo Show doing it now, and we're working with Jake Luddington, who's got various
right.
and sundry things going on as well with MediaBlab.com and JakeLuddington.com. And that
right.
grew out of his experience with Locker Gnome, and now he's kind of doing a lot of those
right.
things on his own, which that's cool. I mean, he's empowered himself and has become a part of the conversation on his own. And so we're working
right.
together doing this because, his audio expertise and, my existing audience that I've had access to since, 1996, it really makes, in my opinion, a pretty strong partnership. So,
yeah.
It's a very small organization. As far as who's doing Gnomedex, it's pretty much Ponzi and myself. We're working
right.
with the folks at Bell Harbor. I wanted to hand this off to another company. I really did. Because it takes so much time and so much energy, but every time we come close, it's like it's going to get ruined if I don't do it right. And
right.
if I don't provide power strips along with Wi-Fi, if I don't make my attendees happy, it's not going to work. It's not going to be my conference. And so,
no.
We have to do it in-house, and it's a struggle. So believe me, I totally respect anything that you're doing in any kind of meat space, any kind of physical space. I understand everything that comes with it.
It's hard to do. I mean, I have such a new respect for it. I've always done online events, and I think it helps when you're doing an offline event that you know how online events are done. But I tell you, it's a whole nother level.
You have no idea.
Work.
You
it's
have
like
no idea.
A house or something.
Dude, you have.
It's like
it's so.
I know.
Funny.
I have no idea. And like, and luckily, I and my girlfriend Judy is going to be helping because she's like an operations
oh,
whiz.
Yeah. How is she doing?
And I'm just. She's great. She's. I'm at her house right now. Judy is also a nurse, and she's working the 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. shift. So. She's a nurse on call now, and so she's dying to do other types of work, and she's a great operations person. So I got to tell you, I can't imagine, doing these kind of things all the time. These are a lot of work.
Well,
they are quite. They are, and actually, I'm starting to, you know, help produce other events too. And you need a team. You really need a team.
It's finding the right team, and every year we learn something different. And I literally got handed the conference for GnomeDex 4, and it turned out to be one of the best ones we ever had. Which, you know, and it's because everybody who made it happen. I mean, it would not have happened were key individuals not involved at the very beginning. And so, you know, I'm thankful for them giving me the opportunity to do GnomeDex 4. Otherwise, it would not have happened. But no, now in approaching GnomeDex 5, with as much as, you know, what I was able to turn GnomeDex 4 into, you know, I've got now 5 years of at least being involved with the conference, but really only 1 year in being involved. Because at one point, we had Lori Lockwood doing GnomeDex 1, 2, and 3. And that was in Iowa. And then I moved it to, closer to me. Someone else had set it up in Lake Tahoe. That was not my decision. I was involved in that decision. So I can't say that I wasn't involved at any level or consulted. I said, yes, that's cool. But hindsight 2020, I don't know if Tahoe was the best place for GnomeDex. That being said, it raised the bar of attendees just like by a factor of 10. Because the people who wanted to be there really wanted to be there. And people made the event. And I think as you move...
It was fun.
Yeah, as you move forward with Podcast Hotel, or whatever it happens to be called, having experienced GnomeDex and seeing what makes it successful, it's that personal level of involvement. I didn't want this year... I really... 300 people was a sweet spot. I really believe that. And GnomeDex 3 was like 600, and GnomeDex 4 was 300, but GnomeDex 4 was like 10 times better than GnomeDex 3. And, you know, and that's... And again, that's my opinion. And there are things that I took feedback from people who came to both 4 and 3. Some people have been there, you know, for the whole time, you know, for every year. You know, I took the feedback seriously and am doing what I can to make adjustments for GnomeDex 5, and now that I have more time, I can.
I learned a lot. Go on.
No, please.
As long as what?
No.
I learned a lot watching you at GnomeDex. It was really interesting. I said, Judy, this guy needs to run for office. I mean, look at him. Like, he's standing at the door. He's shaking every person's hand who walks in. You know, he's working the crowd. I said, this guy's a born politician.
It'll never happen, dude. It'll never happen. You know, I'm becoming a Seattle evangelist, and I've only lived here for a few months, and I can't say I chose Seattle. I really believe Seattle chose me, and I say that with so much seriousness. I was at a point after the last GnomeDex, I just wanted to get out of California. It was just, I couldn't do it. It wasn't for me. And when I came to Seattle for the second time in my life, it just happened to be the right time, and it just, like, the city literally called out to me. And so now, it's interesting that you're, you know, doing stuff in Portland. You know, I do believe that the Pacific Northwest has tons to offer, and it gets overlooked because there aren't enough evangelists really talking about what's going on. So I'm becoming a Seattle, or should I say Seattle area evangelist, whether I want to or not.
Right on. I love Seattle. I love that city. It's just so beautiful there, right on on Puget Sound, and the islands around there. We were up in Vashon Island right around Labor Day, and gosh, it was just fantastic.
See, I haven't spent too much time in Portland, so I can't really make any comparisons.
Portland's a lot smaller, but Portland, I mean, I am a Portland evangelist. I love this city, and that's really, to me, is what I really want. This is why I'm really so excited about the Podcast Hotel, because it's going to be truly a Portland event. We're going to do a lot of fun stuff that's going to really, I want to. To me, it's like a celebration of Portland, and it's kind of its quirkiness, you know. And so I'm going to have bicycles that people can ride around the city, and, you know, and it's going to be, it's great to see this energy around these, you know, around the Northwest, because it's a wonderful place to live. It's just a beautiful place to live.
I've spent a little bit of time in Vancouver. I was up there for Northern Voice, which was another, in my opinion, another fantastic conference that it was Jeremy Wright was involved, I believe, in some of the planning stages. Boris Mann, Darren Barefoot, a lot of these people
right.
who are actually
mm-hmm.
going to be at Gnomedex as well.
Roland? Was Roland
yeah,
part of that?
Roland was involved, and it was just mm-hmm. so... And you'll have to, if you can hear any noise in the background, it's my dogs. I have two kids as well, and I'm babysitting right now. This is a family affair, these Chris Perillo shows. it has to be. The conference was a lot of fun, and it was great because it was the first time I spent time in Vancouver, and I really believe, you know, the more time I spend in this part of the country, the more I wonder, like, how long it's going to be, you know, before it's flooded. I'm starting to worry about that. And it's great. The weather keeps a lot of people away, which is great. That's fine. It just weeds out all the people who don't want to be here, you know, with all the rain. That doesn't bother me a bit. I'm a flannel kind of guy, you know, and
yeah.
I look at...
I mean, like, you grew up in Iowa, right?
Yeah, so I get all extremes, dude. You know, growing up in Iowa, heat waves, you know, cold snaps, tornadoes, you know, it's just like, you know, the worst thing that can happen around here, yeah, we'd have earthquakes, and, you know, the ground underneath us is not exactly the most solid around, and hey, if Mount Rainier decides to blow, that's pretty much game over for Seattle. So, you know, you pick which natural disaster you would most like to live with, you know, and to tell you, you know, to bring this back to, you know, in terms of regionalism, and, you know, it sounds like what you're doing for Portland is fantastic. I just hope Portland sits up and takes notice. One of the frustrations
yeah.
that I had with doing Gnomedex in Iowa for 3 years is that not just the first year, but all the way through the third year, it was a struggle. It was a struggle to get people to understand what was going on. And to their credit, Gnomedex really hadn't defined itself. You know, we threw pasta up against the wall to see what stuck. And, you know, we were hoping that something would come of it, but getting any kind of local support from Iowa, if you're not doing anything in agriculture or insurance, you might as well just forget it. And so now, and I can tell you this, after having just had Gnomedex really launched, I think we've announced it like maybe a week ago or so, and really started accepting registrations, you know, just a few days ago, it's already, like, taken hold. I mean, it's starting to get talked about in the sense that I'm actually getting emails from people who I would have never emailed before, but they want to be involved at some level, and I'm just like, oh, thank God. And even local organizations are just like, wow, this is happening here? This is awesome! I'm like, oh my God, I am home. So Seattle is just pulling me in, you know, even further, and, you know, I'm going to do what I can I don't want to say put the city on the map, the city's already on the map, but really, you know, highlight what's already happening and who's already here and what they're doing. There's this guy named Matt Westervelt, and he runs SeattleWireless.net. He was recently written up in, I think it was Popular Science, talking about how he's literally, through freenetworks.org, making wireless happen, and showing, and literally connecting, or I should say disconnecting if you're talking about cables, the community. And so I dropped an email to Matt. I said, Matt, dude, you're my kind of geek. You know, I would love to have you present something at Gnomedex showing these people what they can do in their own communities to wirelessly network the community. You know, what kind of hardware, what kind of software, and he bases a lot of his stuff on open source. And one of our, you know, one of our other supporters, Tom Pohl, out of Des Moines, Iowa, they did the wireless for Gnomedex 3, he runs a network, iSpot Access, and it is very much like free Wi-Fi that businesses use as a value add to draw in more customers. And it's great. I mean, I love going home to Des Moines in the sense that I know where I can get free Wi-Fi. That's the only reason. I mean, of course, family and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I don't miss the weather. But, you know, to know that I've got free Wi-Fi somewhere is almost essential for me to make a decision going one place versus another. And, you know, seeing that Matt is a local, we haven't met face-to-face, but it's like I already know him. I mean, we've been exchanging emails back and forth. He's saying, hey, you know, maybe I could talk to so-and-so. I'm like, that'd be great. Yeah, let's talk. Yeah. Let's start this discussion. So I can only hope that Portland will be as receptive to what you're doing as it seems that Seattle has been for us.
Well, you know, the nice thing is about Portland is there's definitely a geek culture here.
Do you find that, I mean, obviously Seattle, you know, technology, and to a certain degree, well, I guess a large degree, Vancouver, it seems, is that a Pacific Northwest thing?
I think it may be. I don't know the dynamics of it, but if you look at the meetup groups for podcasters, Portland is number 2 to Southern California. And, you know, there's like 25 members. I'm going to the meeting tomorrow night. You know, that's a lot for a community like this. You also have here, you have Intel here. They have a huge campus here. And so you get a lot of programmers here. You have Uber engineers, electrical engineers here, like working for companies like Mentor Graphics, which is a big electronic design automation company. So you definitely have, do they call it the Silicon Forest in Seattle?
Do they? I know it's an Emerald City. That's the only, I guess, word I've heard used to describe it. But I believe it.
The Silicon Forest?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
If we're king of the forest! I'm sorry, that was a horrible Cowardly Lion impression. Absolutely horrible.
That was good. Okay, yeah. Cowardly Lion, okay.
Did it send chills up your spine there?
It did.
No, okay, well.
Oh.
Thanks, Alex, I appreciate that. Unfortunately, your timing is just a little off. You know,
they call it the Silicon Forest here. There's also, I mean, part of what I'm trying to do is also make it a video blog event. And so there's a lot of people who are way into film here, way into film. And so I'm hoping that'll, you know, help. I mean, you know, I think my agricultural event, you know, in August is you know, I'm going to just have a hell of a time to meet some people.
You've got an agricultural event?
I'm kidding.
Dude, do it in Iowa. I'm telling you. I know the right people. I did it enough times.
Is there going to be an agricultural angle in this trip?
Well, you know, here's the funny thing. You know, we had the Mac user group, or the GnomeDex Mac user group. What is it? God Mug for GnomeDex, a Mac user group that started last year. That, I think, is probably the most fun thing that I see come out of events. And when you do something like what you're planning on doing, that's as long as you're open enough, I mean, just from my experience, as long as you're open enough to let what's going to happen, you're just going to be thrilled with the results. And people are just going to love it.
Oh, yeah. We'll just, you know, and what you did last year, your event was fun. You know, your event was a lot of fun.
But
it was like...
Do you know why?
You know, that's a big part of it. People, like, get excited about it.
It's, and let me tell you, it definitely takes its toll. There are good days and there are not so good days. But having the support of the community has been fantastic. And, you know, this year we decided to, and of course, you know, hotels got a certain amount of space limitations as well. We didn't want to work with a hotel this year at all because my experience with hotels has not been very positive because you have to, people don't understand this if they've never put on an event, but if you work with a hotel, you have to sell a certain amount of rooms. And if you don't, you're liable for those rooms. So you better make sure that the numbers you give them are accurate. Otherwise, it's your butt on the line. And beyond that, at a hotel type of event, or when you work with a hotel, they want to charge you like $50 per gallon of coffee. I mean, it's just, it's outrageous. Yeah, and it's not even good coffee. Yeah. You know, and people are walking down to Starbucks anyway. So, what's the point? And so, you know, this year we were really frustrated, and we had gone to the Blog Business Summit. Both Jake and I had gone there, and I was just like, wow, this place could be really good for Gnome Decks. The only problem was it was limited in space, but what they could give us was just absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we put Gnome Decks at a price point for both past Gnome Dexers and new Gnome Dexers, which, in my humble opinion, is still just absolutely amazing in terms of what we're able to provide. It's about half the price of the conference that we had gone to that really covers the same kind of topics. And plus, you know, the I'm telling you, the power strips are what's going to sell this conference more than anything else.
Isn't it funny?
It's amazing because I even had people tell me of recent conferences, and I'm not going to point any names because everybody would know what I meant. Either the Wi-Fi sucks or the Wi-Fi is okay, and there's nowhere to plug in. And that you can't do that anymore. You can't slap the word technology on a conference if you're not going to provide those things. Period. It's just it's wrong. It's misleading, and it's wrong. But that's my opinion, and I have the right to say that, given that I'm providing that, and I understand, because not only am I, and I hate to say this, not only am I the president, but I'm also a client. I try to create a conference that I would want to go to. So if you construct the podcast hotel in much the same light, everyone's going to love it. I guarantee everybody's going to love it. But you have to be, you're integral.
Yeah. It's that infrastructure that needs to really be there.
Trust me, dude. I know. I get it. And you know what? I tell you, finding the right person for the infrastructure and the coordination is key. And once you find that, if you find the perfect person, never let them go. Never, ever. No matter what. Because I'm telling you.
Who is your person?
We've gone through a lot. The churn, we had Lori Lockwood ended up coordinating the first three conferences, as I said, and she did an absolutely fantastic job. How she pulled it off, I'll never know. And then Jake had helped her in Iowa as well, the things that she couldn't do. So they were very much hands-on for the first three. And, the fourth one, it kind of got passed around, the responsibilities, and ultimately it fell onto, my shoulders, and Ponzi picked up a lot of slack as well from what happened and what didn't happen. So I would say if there's a coordinator out there who really kind of got it was Ponzi. And Gnome Dex 4 just could not have come together the way it did without her effort. So she
what did she do? What did she help you do?
Well,
I'm trying to help, because this is where Judy's going to be so important.
Well, logistically, and of course Judy and Ponzi met at Gnome Dex.
Mm-hmm.
Ponzi could probably talk to Judy and tell her exactly the process.
I'd love to do that.
And it's a no-brainer, in terms of helping you. The basics are, you've got to look at your costs. And that's the bottom line. You have to be able to cover your costs. And for the even for the first 4 years, and I say this, the first 4 years, the only 4 years we've done Gnome Dex, that was never really analyzed fully. And we had a kind of an idea, but we didn't really see the entire picture. A lot of things were contingent on other things. And so this year, Ponzi took a hard look. These are our costs. This is what we're going to do. This is what, you know, this is the way it's going to happen, period. End of story. We can't do it. And we did, honestly, doing it for, 4 years and offering an initial price of $99 was a steal. We can't do that anymore. You know, someone made the comment that, you know, offering it at a higher price this year was almost like kicking him in the nuts. I said, well, dude, we've been kicking ourselves in the nuts for the past 4 years. So, you know, I hate to say it, but we're tired of kicking ourselves in the nuts.
Put your cup on, pal.
So, dude, and not to say you should have enjoyed it while it lasted, but I'm glad, you know, and believe me, I've actually gone through, some people have voiced concerns, and I've gone to them on an individual level, if they tell me and they talk to me, and I'll say, look, what can I do? How can I help you come to Gnomedex? You know, let's talk. And it's worked out for at least four different people that have taken the time to email me and say, look, dude, you know, I want to this, but I can't this. And I said, well, let's talk. And again, these are the people who, you know, have come and supported Gnomedex in the past, so I'm going to have a large degree of latitude with them, because they have supported me in the past. But I have to look at my hard costs, too, and, you know, what it takes, the time that it takes, and the energy, and the effort. It's just, it's believe me, it's, at the end of the day, there's a reason why, there's a reason why it only happens once a year, Alex. It's so time, compared to the stuff that we do online, it's time intensive, but what you get out of it is just, if you do it right, it comes back tenfold, and I will tell you this, after having done it for about, well, this is our fifth year, it takes about 5 years to get it right, and it takes five years to get a strong foothold. Nine times out of ten, I mean, this isn't the case for every conference, but if you're coming at it from a very independently produced way, you're not going to have a lot of the resources that may be available to, you know, larger corporations. But don't let that stop you. You know, if you've got a vision, and this is just generally to anybody, if you've got a vision and you've got an idea, you know, pull it off.
That's it.
You know, and
just do it.
Just do it.
It's like it becomes like it's a journey.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know where it's going to go. It's like you don't know what's going to happen next, but that's the excitement of it. But you have what the vision is. And it's not like you're lost. You're on a quest of some kind.
It's a lot of the minutiae. Yeah, it's the minutiae that really it bogs me down. But I'm more of the kind of guy, you know, who has, you know, an amazing address book. And, you know, am lucky enough to, you know, and here's the thing, not only communicate with these other individuals, but really help them in their efforts in getting from point A to point B. And that's really what I turn Gnomedex into, is more kind of like, hey, these are the people I know, maybe you should know them too. And that's what really has made for, you know, four outstanding events for us. And, you know, leverage what you have, and you may not realize what's there right now for you to leverage. It will unveil itself in the strangest ways, you know, and in putting together, you know, the podcast hotel, it's difficult to be everything to everybody. And that's a very hard thing for me to accept. You know, I want a lot of people to be happy. I want everybody involved to be happy, but unfortunately, that's just not reality. It's idealistic. And, you know, for as much as I would love to have everybody involved on stage, there's not enough time. You know, especially at a single-track conference that's being put on, literally, this year being produced by two individuals, myself and Ponzi. It's not scalable, so to speak, and it definitely takes its toll. And it doesn't get done for money. I tell you, the conferences that get pulled off, if they make money, they're in a minority. And just look at the conference scene today. It takes a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of effort, and the conference business is a racket. And people don't understand this. They don't understand this. So the best thing you can do is do your best. And you know, people have given me a lot of slack, and I say that very positively, because they know that this is a labor of love, and they may not know that it's not, believe me, Gnomedex is not, you know, the only thing that I do. I've got a lot of things going on, as do you, and as long as, and you're not going to have fun with it every day, that's a guarantee, as long as, though, you, in a first year out, you have an idea about where you want to be, but don't necessarily have any specific goals, I think you're going to be satisfied with the result.
Yeah. You know, it makes it challenging because, you know, the people who are attending Gnomedex are passionate believers in what they're doing, right? The the people who are attending that, who are attending the Gnomedix event, really believe wholeheartedly in the work that they're doing. I mean, that's what I saw at Gnomedix. There are people there who are like, they really love what they do.
Yep.
And that can be a real challenge, you know, because those people have, they believe so firmly in what they're doing that there's inevitably going to be that conflict because they believe it should be done, you know, because they want it done a certain way.
Yeah.
Do you have any good stories? Can you share one?
Oh, boy. I've got so many good stories. Gnomedix has just been, it's been a labor of love, and it's been something that has been a fantastic part of my brand that at one point I thought was just never going to happen again, and Gnomedix 4 really turned me around. I mean, really. And, of course, the success I'm already seeing with 5 is just like, oh, my God, I finally made it. So if you can make it 5 years, you've made it. Yeah, God, where do I begin with stories? It's hard to think.
How about some of the staff? Well, that's different. I mean, I was thinking like the staff you met at the hotel.
Oh, God.
In Lake Tahoe.
Well, actually, the best hotel experience I can tell you was in Des Moines, at the Savory Hotel, downtown Des Moines. They treated us like royalty. Every single attendee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had no qualms in recommending that hotel if anybody's breezing through town. They made Gnomedix 3 a fantastic experience. I suppose as did the convention center. But, you know, at that point, like I said, Gnomedix was still kind of defining itself, and it really took, I think, until last year before it really made an impact on the landscape where I thought it needed to make an impact, where I really wanted it to really, you know, take hold and empower people. And and this is honestly, I swear to God, Alex, I was waking up this morning. You know how you have, like, random thoughts as you're waking up? One of the things I was thinking is that a lot of the people who are coming to Gnomedix, you know, either as attendees or actual, you know, presenters, are evangelists. And I started thinking, you know, there really isn't any kind of conference for evangelists, tech evangelists, that is. I'm like, you know, Gnomedix is just kind of, you know, taking it up a notch and have attracted all these technologists who are passionate about what they do, and passion it translates into evangelism. So, and here's the thing, you know, I don't necessarily see, this is what this year is going to be about. I mean, I kind of let it evolve. I kind of get a general idea, but then I said, what is the overview? And obviously a podcast hotel, you're talking about podcasting, and underneath that, you're talking about all the supportive technologies behind the idea of podcasting.
Yeah.
So you've got your goal, you've got your mission kind of set, but it's still, you know, you're still fluid. With Gnomedix, not to say we were all over the map, but you know, we tried a lot of things, and what stuck? What do people like? Well, people like meeting people who are doing things, period. I mean, that's just, it's a universal truth. And going to a conference where there are a whole bunch of people who kind of maybe doing something interesting, but not really, it's just, that's not a value. In my opinion, it's just not a value. And you get lost in the hallways and all these things. So, I don't know. It's so hard to explain because every year is different. I don't really have any that I can think of. It's turning into wait a minute. I'm supposed to be interviewing you, not the other way around.
But, you know, Chris,
I'm worrying out of this one.
Chris, I have to make this work. You know why? Because there's no way they're going to let me get back into textiles. There's no way.
Well, especially now. You know, if all of a sudden you're done with Courant and I see you launching a textiles blog, I know I'll have to look outside because hell will have frozen over.
Oh gosh. Well, good. Well, this has been real terrific, Chris.
Yeah. And obviously we have a lot more things to talk about, you know, and if you need us as a resource, if we can help you in any way, and I'm saying this from a Locker Gnome standpoint, as well as Gnomedix.
You've got an evangelist here for Gnomedix, there's no doubt about that. I mean, It was so much fun last year to work with Doug Kay.
Yeah.
And, you know, and record those shows. And, like, the opportunity last year, it was, like, so amazing to sit down with Steve Wozniak and interview him about his life, you know, and hear him speak. And hearing someone like Will Wheaton, one of the most engaging people I've ever heard speak. But Steve Wozniak, sitting down with him and talking to him, and I'll never forget it because you sit down with him and he started talking more about his life as a prankster and how he loves to pull pranks. And it was Wozniak is like this mythic guy, right? You know, when you hear stuff like that, it's just like, it takes it up a notch.
Yeah.
And so you've got an evangelist here, and again, a Courant, we'll do anything we can to help you make this event a greater success than it has been.
Well, every year it seems to get better, and I'm serious when I say that the Pacific Northwest, you know, I'm not a self-appointed Seattle evangelist, but I ask everybody that breezes through town, I say, so when are you moving here? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm serious. It's like, dude, it's crazy how Seattle called
Rice,
to me.
I think Carrick Rice is moving up.
Well,
I mean, he's been talking about it.
Oh, has he? Okay, I didn't want to out him, so to speak. And of course, he's, in the past just few days, Eric's name is, like, all over the place. Like, relaunching.
No kidding, huh?
Yeah, and Engadget's podcast. And now he's also going to be doing GnomeDex. And then he's starting to do something, playing Warner Brothers music, officially. And,
yeah.
What's great about it is not just sitting on the sidelines, is being in the middle of it, and helping other people get in the middle of it. So that's what keeps me going, you know, just facilitating these things. And I'm sure it's just beginning. And trust me, the things that are going to come out of doing the podcast hotel event, you will be amazed. You'll be tired, and you'll be, trust me, dude, it's going to tap dance on your last nerve. You have no idea. I swear to God, last year was the first year I announced that there was going to be a GnomeDex 5 at GnomeDex. It would not happen before, and I literally, in years before, had only sat on the sidelines of organizing. Putting together any kind of conference, when you're ready to scream in frustration, just understand.
Well,
got me. It's
I'm writing this blog at Courant called Event Lab, and I'm gonna just try to like record as much as I can about the experiences of it, because I already know now, you know. Trying to, you know, manage everything else, as you were saying, in addition to it, is a challenge enough. And then doing a big event on, you know, and doing an event is moving into a different universe.
So you're actually going to chronicle your experiences in doing this?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be the goal is going to try to like. Chronicle it, and you know, in different ways. You know, talk to the Dan Caterer again today. Talk, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like I said,
food is expensive, Chris.
Dude, don't even get me started. I know. Like I said, the fact that we've pulled it off this year, we've literally got, and I kid you not, unlimited food and beverages throughout the day. I mean, like. Bottled water, soda, like snacks, candy, food, like, you know, fresh fruit, sandwiches. I mean, it's just bread, you know, cheeses. I mean, it's seriously, we got unlimited at the current venue. And I know what these things cost. A lot of people don't. A lot of people are shielded from this. But I get it. I understand. Been there, done that. So
can you... Can you say where you're going tomorrow, or are you just going to the Valley?
No, I can't say. Yeah, I can't say exactly where I'm going. I'm going to Silicon Valley, and I was told in the initial email that this was like super NDA, so I can't even say who I'm going down there for, unfortunately.
Okay.
But it's
you're having a fun. You're having a good time, aren't you? You're like doing the. The Google AdSense thing is really you're becoming
an evangelist,
kind of the go-to guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I'm the number one hit for AdSense Secrets now, which is cool.
All right.
Yeah, not that I have any. Ha ha. The I think, but honestly, Alex, I think that's what makes this whole realm interesting to be kind of in the middle of, you know, being so tightly involved with other communities. And having the chance to, you know, pick up the phone and talk to an Alex Williams, say, for an hour and a half, and really communicate some effective things, you know, covering ground on, you know, being a journalist, seeing the way, you know, citizen media is moving to talking about the Pacific Northwest and doing conferences. I mean, it's all about a conversation. And a lot of people just are fine to watch things happen. And, you know, always think, God, I should do this, I should do that. And sometimes I hope to just inspire one other person with something that I do. And that is hopefully, someone I'm sure out there listening to this has gained some different perspective on either you or I or something that's out there or thought differently about something they had no idea was even there. And that's really what I think is adding value in the content landscape right now. Just sharing ideas and helping inspire other people.
Well, it's fun, isn't it? It's a fun world to be in. And it is fun to see, you know, people see their day and, you know, and grow. And, I mean, I think of all the different people in that respect who I've gotten to know. Eric Rice and, you know, watching Robert Scoble's, you know, progress over the past year has just been amazing.
Now, how long do you think it's going to be before Robert gets hired away?
Good question. I don't know. Or he decides to do something else. You know, I don't know. I don't know. What I'm waiting to see is, you know, where is he going to take it to next? It seems to me that is where his mission is not accomplished, I don't think, at Microsoft yet. But he has helped transform that company quite a bit.
You think so?
I think so, yeah. Our world is, I think, pretty small, but, you know, and in terms of the people who were following it is, you know, closely. But, you know, I mean, he is getting a lot of attention, and that, I think, helps breathe more fresh air inside the company as well. I don't know how great a dynamic change it'll actually make, and, you know, in terms of, in the big picture, but I mean, do you think he's made an impact? From my own view, it appears that he has.
I think his impact it's definitely heavy, but I just don't know if it's the direction he wants his impact to go. I mean, everybody sets out to, you know, do something, and the way I see his actions, I other people see him very clearly, clear as day. But are the right people seeing them? And that's my question. We obviously see the things that are going on because we're immersed in this world where information gets shared, and we understand the blogosphere and RSS and, you know, the future of media and citizen journalism. But what about the rest of the world? I mean, we've obviously shaken things up within our own little galaxy within this world. But what about everybody else? And that's, I think, it's something that we usually don't think about. You can't see the forest through the trees. And unfortunately, I think we're still kind of there. We're still in the middle of something, and we have no idea what we're in the middle of. And we're so secluded and haven't had a chance to really, you know, branch out and bring in the world at large. I mean, the best thing we can do or hope for are, you know, mentions on network news, you know, getting the scoop, or bloggers this or bloggers that. I saw Jeff Jarvis on MSNBC as I was working out the other day. I'm like, holy cow, it's Jeff! And he was, like, doing audible trackbacks almost. And I guess it's the easiest way to explain what he was doing. And then, of course, The Daily Show did, you know, kind of ascend up on bloggers. And we're on the fringe of pop culture. But I don't think I don't think that culture understands exactly what is really going on. So,
well, a few years ago, I signed up for a Blogger Pro account, and then they eliminated the Blogger Pro program. But they said anyone who had a Blogger Pro account, if you just send us your information about the account, we'll send you a blogger sweatshirt. So I did, and I got my blogger sweatshirt, right? and I wear it. And it isn't really until, like, the past month or so that people have noticed it.
Huh.
And, and it's something is, they're like, blogger? Are you a blogger? I never had that before.
I've got one. I can go one better. Tonight, as I was going for coffee down at Verite, which is like a local place where you can get like cupcakes and really decent coffee, they have free Wi-Fi. And I went there to meet Mike Torres from MSN Spaces. And I was wearing an RSS pin. And on my way out the door, I usually put one on because if I meet someone, that I know, I'm like, hey, do you have this yet? And I just hand it to him. Well, the guy at the counter said, what is this RSS thing? I'm seeing it everywhere. What is it? And I just beamed. I'm like, oh. I said, well, and I tried to explain it to him, and then, of course, I popped open the laptop and showed him what it was, and he's like, oh, my God. I showed him blog lines. I showed him what Firefox was doing. I showed him Maxim. I showed him how it was easy to, organize a lot of the stuff that was, he already was trying to keep track of, and he got it right away. I mean, just showing it to him, he got it right away. So That I think was more exciting than being recognized, for, like, blogger, that word, to have or be asked about RSS.
I wear that RSS, your RSS button around, and people ask me what it is, and they say, what's RSS? I say,
isn't it great?
It's RSS.
Well, if you're a pirate, yeah, I suppose.
And but then you explain it, but you got to poke. That's the trick, is popping open the laptop.
Yeah,
it's like
you got to do it. You got to show them.
My kids are starting to get it. Like I went in last year. I explained RSS to my daughter's fourth grade class. They immediately understood it.
Oh, dude, yeah, they get it.
It was really interesting.
And
so, like, my daughter, loves to go to blog lines, and she loves, I think he's a guy at Microsoft. He has a blog called Art Through RSS, and he publishes, a piece from the Louvre. He'll, like, have a picture of a painting from the Louvre and then a description of it.
Oh, wow.
And my daughter loves it. She loves it. She just will go in there. She's like, was there anything art through RSS this week?
I've got to teach Ponzi to when and when not to use her news aggregator. Because she caught Scoble's... She understands RSS. And she was reading up on Scoble's posts the other day. And Scoble was saying, hey, how about let's do a geek camping trip right before GnomeDex unwind. And I said, oh, no. And Ponzi was all over it. And she was like, yeah, I'm going to REI. I'm going to buy hiking boots. We're going to buy this. And I'm like, crap. So now I'm signed up for this unwired camping trip that's going to be happening before GnomeDex.
I'm excited about it. What are the dates for it? Has he set dates?
I can tell you, GnomeDex is happening June 23rd through the 25th.
Right.
So, and that's towards
Let's get that in.
Yeah, that's towards the end of the week. And so if we were going to do it before, It would probably have to happen the days before GnomeDex. I couldn't imagine it happening the weekend before, just because people would most likely be traveling, if they are traveling here for GnomeDex, would be there for GnomeDex. So most likely it would have to be coordinated for like a night, probably like a Wednesday night type of excursion. And like I said, I didn't volunteer it. I'm not coordinating anything. It's an unofficial thing that's happening that may or may not surround the event that is GnomeDex. So, and I'm getting pulled into it. So, kicking and screaming. I'm just not an outdoors kind of guy.
But you got the gear.
Yeah, well, I do. I've got, I can tell you, REI, really expensive items, but that's not what it stands for. But I can tell you, they really, they care. I mean, the sales guy, the boot sales guy, I never saw a guy who was more excited about hiking boots than this guy. And he gave me the right boots. I mean, these things are just, they're wonderful. I'm wearing them right now, and they match my sweatshirt. Otherwise, I couldn't wear them, because Ponzi makes sure that I match when I leave the house. Otherwise, I can't leave the house. She's got, like, a detector system that just automatically goes off and, like, alerts her by SMS if I'm leaving the house, like, with a cap that's not matching. I've taught her way too much. I've empowered her way. There is a point where you can teach your significant other way too much about technology. News aggregator is one of them, so keep the news aggregator away from Judy.
Yeah, I will.
The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.